on the phone line with us this afternoon to take a look at the agricultural futures markets here on the closing market report from Illinois Public Media on this 16th day of May is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, the northern part of Illinois saw snow in Rockford and DeKalb, and gosh, I even saw a snowman, and I think that's where that came from. That's really something else on the 16th day of May.
Yeah, and this comes in the aftermath of Kankakee and Pontiac and, you know, over into Indiana and the northern third and the northern third of Illinois, a good chunk of it, you know, seeing 1.5 to 3.5 inches of rain from last weekend and early this week. And so there are certainly areas that the trade could focus on if it wanted to regarding the corn planting, you know, the northern tier, especially with Minnesota still way behind along with Wisconsin and Michigan. But this week was all about the USDA report igniting that seasonal technical break to the downside, and that especially in the early part of the week. And no May, you mentioned the May expiration of futures, and the May expiration of futures not igniting any kind of fireworks when the July took over or when the May went off the board. And so we saw a real strong conviction by the funds to unwind spreads. And, you know, the most surprising and the biggest winner on the week to me, given the USDA report, was November beans, down only 3.75 on the week, and that's with a new crop carryover of 330 million bushels, and USDA saying global soybean ending stocks at the end of next year will be an all-time new record. So kind of tells you what the funds were up to this week, not really looking at the supply-demand fundamentals as much as probably looking at the technicals and looking at the seasonality of the grain markets.
No, indeed. So we have November beans, in your mind, a winner because it didn't go down. But on the other hand, let's see, corn in the July down 24 cents on the week, December down 17.75. I suppose that had to do with USDA's bigger than expected, I don't know whether it's bigger than expected, but 1.7 billion bushel carryout for next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think what happened in the corn, and this maybe is a stretch trying to connect the two dots here, but I heard a lot about the El Nino special reports that came out. You know, the CPC came out earlier, and I think it might have even been before the USDA report last week, and they said 65% chance of El Nino, and the trade really didn't look at that too much as far as pricing it in. But then there's a couple fresh reports that came out this week, one global, and it said, you know, essentially we're on our way to an El Nino year, and that's typically pretty good for the center part of the United States. And I guess what I think happened, Todd, was in the corn, in the case of the corn, especially the December contract, is the trade said 165 USDA yield, El Nino. Okay, that makes sense. We can do that. I think we're a long way from getting there, but I think oversimplifying the whole situation, that's probably what the big factor in corn was this week, along with the fact that, again, the spreading continued. Did you realize that the November beans gained on the Dease corn to the point, almost 20 cents, to the point, though, that that ratio is now back to where it was on December 30th. So we have essentially erased all the corn premium to bid up acres as we are still going into the planting. And I think this may sway some bean acres if you don't already have your chemicals down and you're in DeKalb, Illinois, or Pontiac, Illinois, and you're sitting here saying, golly, it's going to be May 24th next week. Do I have the ability to get corn in and have it come up, or should I go ahead and maybe move over into some bean acres?
And I suppose that might even be a more important decision if you're in the northern parts of Minnesota,
absolutely,
if you're in the Dakotas.
Yeah.
I saw, I think today, on one of the Twitter feeds where a guy had dug down 3 feet and found frozen water in his tile. He was wondering why it hadn't dried out, and I guess he knows now.
Excellent point. Look at spring wheat. I mean, you know, look at where we were. We were almost three times behind where we should be on the five-year average for planting, but spring wheat, along with hard red, which got another frost this week and no rain, was able to lead the drive to the downside. So, again, I don't think you're trading micro fundamentals. If I had to pick at something that I didn't like this week, it was yesterday's trade where we had the macro risk-off wholesale fire sale type mindset in all the asset classes across the board. And except for natural gas, that was because the Department of Energy and their infinite wisdom decided to change how we look at the storage figures, and they're doing that as we go into the summer you know, cold the summer heating degree units time period. So let's hope we don't have a very warm summer in the Northeast, because that natural gas could be quite exciting thanks to the new way we figure the storage.
Cold, that I didn't hear what they did, what they do.
Well, I didn't go into the specifics, but right. I know that they kind of took away some of the storage. I don't know whether it was in the salt, the previous salt mines, or how they did it, but they went ahead and essentially took some storage off of the market, and that allowed the market was up 4 or 5% on Thursday after that announcement was made.
But of course the trade won't pay enough attention to it, and they'll forget about it, and the numbers will look skewed to them eventually, even if they don't today.
Right.
Speaking of skewed, let's go back to the corn just a bit. I'm wondering, do you think that the trade in general has built too much premium into the corn, or too much discount into the corn market at this point?
Yeah, I mean, if I just answered it from a standpoint of the last 5 years, there was only 1 year, and that was last year. The 2013 December corn made its high in January before we even got planted. But if you look at 2009, that high was in June. If you look at 2010, it was in November. 2011 and 2012, both in August. And I think just from that standpoint, and I still believe fundamentally, Todd, that if the hard red wheat combines roll and the yield monitors show disappointing yields, the trade is not prepared for that. I really feel like the trade is in a mindset that it's going to be like last year in the hard red wheat belt, where the tour said it was bad, but by the time they got combining, it was much better than expected. So between the seasonality and the historical of the last 5 years of Dease corn and when we make the highs, and the likelihood, I think, being very fair and very good that we could go back up and challenge the old highs in hard red wheat with harvest problems, I think, yeah, you still have another run up in the corn very likely, and the discount could be very prevalent. And this is where I think livestock feeders really need to be on point here as they head into the 1st of June, because both meal and corn could be one of the best things to lock in to protect your break-evens.
Yeah, there are things that happen in the near term and then in the longer term. So let's start with the hard red winter wheat. You're 500 miles closer than I am. Do you hear anything about whether there's much of a difference between this year and last year? I'm kind of guessing that there's a lot of a difference between the way farmers are looking at their crop.
Well, and even the tour, yeah, good point. The tour came out and said when it finished up that unlike last year, central Kansas and central Oklahoma were not going to be there to offset the disrupted weather of the pattern of the western belt in the hard red wheat country. This week, you know, I heard from clients in the panhandle of Texas, clients in western Kansas, And both of them, all of them, have said to me over the last 3 weeks that their crop continues to decline. Even the crop conditions report shows that. I mean, you look at Oklahoma, Texas, and Kansas, and you have, on average, 60% or two-thirds of that crop in very poor and poor condition. And those producers in those regions are saying, I don't care how much rain I get, it's not going to help that very poor and poor wheat. And if they're on top of that, like I said earlier this week, we think we had a frost out here in western Kansas that probably did some more damage to already vulnerable weeds. So I think there's quite a bit of difference between this year and last year, especially as we head into the third week of May.
Okay, so that would spike or maybe push wheat prices higher, drag corn along with it. But then later on, there might be some out-of-condition wheat that would have to be fed to livestock, right? And that would
You bet. That's exactly right. And I think later on, I think what you want to do is keep in mind that you've got a deflationary bias building in the global economy. And so whatever supplies we do lose right here, right now, in the micro fundamental support, I think down the road, the macro side could also work against you. A firming dollar could work against you. And I think that's what you don't want to get too crazy in love with the long side of markets when it's a supply-led market. And look how violent it's been the last 4 weeks. I mean, traders love it, but, you know, when we're hedging and we're trying to lock in cost of production and profit, it's not very fun, these supply-led markets.
All right, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He joins us from his Atchison, Kansas office on this Friday afternoon.